Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the Live Issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnistry Inc. Rambling for sin. No borders, no race, the world.
My bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck, and joining me are my two good buddies, first and foremost, from Geek and Sundry, Game Crate, and Retro Magazine, the one, the only, the George Clooney of game journalism, the DCD.
Hey, what's up, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I'm saying happy holidays. Also, happy Star Wars Day.
And happy Star Wars Day. And, of course, joining us once again is our good friend, YouTube man, host of the Into the Badlands recap show, and video editor extreme, the man known as Brohawk Riley, John Riley.
What's up, dude?
Hey, I'm doing good. How's your Christmas going?
I got everything bought, except for presents for the parents, so, you know. Running out of money, so I'll just give them a card that says Merry Christmas. Thanks for everything.
Thanks for bringing me into this world.
Yes.
Thanks for having sex. Don't tell me about it, but thanks for having sex.
So, this is the last episode before Christmas and the last episode before the No Borders, No Race Top 20 Albums of 2015 shows. We got a couple of cool things to talk about, but first, our good buddy, the DCD here, has a special list that he would like to share with us. The best and worst films of 2015 thus far.
Just a quick rundown. I didn't rank them yet, and I did leave a little room because I'm seeing Hateful Eight this Friday, so that might make the best list still. So it's kind of incomplete, but I did want to run down some of the really good and really shitty films of 2015. So, like I said, I haven't ranked these yet, but I wanted to run these down. So for the best, I put down Sicario, which was a really good action thriller with Emily Blunt and Benicio Del Toro, if you haven't seen it yet. Kingsman, The Secret Service,
which
is an amazing adaptation. I actually put Ant-Man ahead of the new Avengers movie because I really enjoyed Ant-Man. So I definitely ranked that in that list there. Mad Max Fury Road, obviously. The Martian, which I thought was really good. Inside Out, which was, I think, Pixar's best movie in years. Crimson Peak, a really ignored Guillermo del Toro classic, I think. Really good. And, of course, Star Wars. I'm going to rank these. As soon as I see The Hateful Eight, I'll put in a final ranking, and I'll let you know what the best are there overall.
Yes.
It's going to be really tough between Star Wars and Mad Max, though, because both of those got such great, you know, great entries. They're really cool. Now, let's talk about the worst real quick.
Let's hear about the shitty ones of 2015.
Let's poop this out real quick. Hot Tub Time Machine 2. That was terrible. You know what John Cusack walks away from a film? It's going to be bad. That's just...
And remember, this is the same John Cusack who played fucking Edgar Allan Poe, one of the worst interpretations of Poe I've ever seen.
Not to mention, wasn't he in a movie this year with Jackie Chan and Adrian Brody, and it was a big Chinese... I want to see it, though. Dragon Blade. I want to see that, just to see how it is. Let's see. Mordecai. I don't think anything else needs to be said. Just Johnny trying not to do anything, you know, whatever. Tomorrowland. I was disappointed in this. As great as it looks and everything, and as great as the premise is, I think it just blew it, like, big time. I don't think I've been this disappointed with a Disney movie since Maleficent.
Really?
Yeah, I was just, it was just a letdown for me. Terminator Genesis, obviously. Good
Lord. I like that movie.
You did?
No, it was terrible. I'm sorry.
Let's let John defend himself. Let's let John defend himself.
Okay, please. Let's hear it. What you got to say?
Now, I enjoyed this because much like the Star Wars remake by J.J. Abrams, he was able to tell the same story but redo it almost in a parallel dimension, much like Earth 2 on Flash. And in an alternate dimension, this could have happened, and this is how it would have played out. And I enjoyed the relationship between Sarah Connor and the Terminator very much so. There are things that could have been changed, and actors could have acted better. But it was also it was very enjoyable. I thought it was going to be worse than I
experienced. See, I look at it being wrong for several reasons. First off, the guy who was playing Kyle Reese was nowhere near the level of Michael Biehn. He threw me off entirely. And this is the same dude, I think, who also shadow over A Good Day to Die Hard. I think he's the same guy. Yeah, John Courtney, I think his name was, or something. I don't give a shit.
Worse than Michael Biehn?
Yeah, worse than Michael Biehn. And Michael Biehn's Michael Biehn. So there you go. You know? Secondly, they gave away the big twist in the trailer. If you had watched the Star Wars The Force Awakens trailer and they let you know right off the bat you know who was going to die, you'd be fucking pissed off. You know what I mean? The Terminator Genisys revealing the big reveal that John Connor isn't who he said he was. And that just throws off the entire complexity of what the series was building up to.
Exactly. You know, and that's why I refused to go see the movie when they spoiled the biggest thing.
And it pissed me off so bad. And then the ending was so cryptic. It was just like stupid. And then it just was. It'd be like, okay, it's dead. No, wait, it's not dead. Not to mention the fact that the, what's his name from Doctor Who? Smith. Matt Smith. Yeah.
He's not Doctor Who. According to my records. No.
Okay. Still, regardless, they wasted him and they wasted J.K. Simmons. You got a dude who busted his ass to get an Oscar from Whiplash, and he's barely in the movie he could have been a great factor in the movie, and they just cast it better, but they didn't. And because of that, because the action felt a little bit off, I mean, that whole school bus flip was just a laugh to me. Because it really was. I don't know. I just felt like when James Cameron said this was his favorite Terminator movie outside of the ones he made, I think he must have been either drinking or bribed or both.
Well, look at what the other movies that were out before him.
Even Terminator 3 was acceptable compared to Salvation and Genesis. Yes. Both those were letdowns to me.
And they ruined the whole entire story in the trailer.
Right. Anyway, yeah, I should move on. This is depressing. Okay, real quick.
Bob, are you going to see Dawn of Justice?
What? Of course I'm going to see Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, but didn't you find it like the movie ruined when you saw that new trailer?
Let's be honest, they needed to draw in the crowd. In that regard, I knew they were going to add some sort of factor because it wasn't going to be all about, this is the movie that's going to tie in with the Justice League. So you know Batman versus Superman is going to happen and they're both going to survive. It's going to be a hell of a fight, but they're both going to survive. We know that right off the bat.
That is
so
true.
They had to add another factor. They had to add in something to make Lex Luthor look menacing, because right now Jesse Eisenberg does not look menacing. He looks like a
poor man's cookie crazy bananas.
He looks like a poor man's version of the Joker. You know, so he needed a factor that added some sort of menace to him. So, you know, I'm glad they introduced Doomsday. And people bitching about Doomsday looking like a Ninja Turtle, go look at the comics. He looks just like he does in the comics, even if it is a little Ninja Turtle-y, whatever. He does look like he does in the comics. I'm excited for this movie. But before I wasn't. You know, I watched the trailer and I'm like, yeah, whatever, it looks all cryptic and everything. But then they started showing more and more, and it just seems like Zack Snyder gets what made, you know, the Batman-Superman conflict so big. And, you know, it might be over the top like Man of Steel was. In fact, I'm probably betting on it, but I still think it'll be fun. But I think they needed to show something to show Lex Luthor meant business, because early trailers was like, I don't buy him for Lex Luthor for a second. It's Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but he is. You know, Zombieland, but, you know, he doesn't exactly scream menace like, say, Heath Ledger did in The Dark Knight.
Yeah, no, it's not that crazy kind of a...
So I think they needed to show something to indicate that Lex Luthor meant business, and Doomsday was just about right. Plus, they didn't reveal some other stuff in the movie. We don't know what Aquaman's going to do in it. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with, like, the conflict itself and what the final fight with Doomsday is going to look like. I mean, if it was anything like the Man of Steel fight between Zod and Superman, we're in for a treat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though half the city will be destroyed.
Half the world will be destroyed.
I know, right? I should get back to this list because, you know, we didn't want to sit around and talk about how depressing Terminator
is. Yeah. You also forgot. Is that your worst movies? Is that all?
Well, I'm not done with all the worst movies. I still got a few others I want to come off just because.
I hope so.
Taken 3.
Oh, God.
Let's multi-cut everything and make the fight scenes as lame as possible. Good Lord, what a deflated series. They should have just stopped at the first Taken. Because the first Taken was terrific. Second Taken was third Taken was, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2. I don't
know. Those are not saying.
Good Lord. And then on top of that, the Ridiculous 6, which is so bad. I think you know, the character that has the most appeal in that movie is the burrow that takes a shit everywhere. That's how bad it is.
That's just Adam Sandler fucking with us.
Yeah, I mean, come on. He was even terrible in Pixels. I put out a tweet today saying if they had taken out Adam Sandler and put Chris Pratt into Pixels, it would have been a far better movie. Just saying.
Or even just take out Kevin James's present. Come on. Who can believe? There's nothing believable about Kevin James being the president.
The movie was offering enough fantasy anyway, like Pac-Man eating through city streets. It's obviously the movie wasn't going for logic. So I'm like, fuck it. Kevin James is president. Okay. The Wedding Ringer, that was just a really awful buddy comedy. I just did not get into that at all. The remake of Vacation, which felt like an unnecessary addition and just did not have the appeal of the previous movie. Even like European Vacation was better, and that movie was shit.
I actually liked European Vacation.
I don't know. And of course, Fantastic Four, which was horrible.
So the movies. That's a lot. That's a huge scope. But you forgot one very, very important, probably the worst movie of 2015 that I would.
50 Shades of Grey. I refused.
Which one?
Now,
Jupiter Ascending come out in 2015.
I accepted worst. That movie for one reason, because Eddie Redmayne hammed it up so badly.
I'm going to do this again.
It was stupid ridiculous. I agree. It was absolutely ridiculous that everybody's fighting over Mila Kunis.
Like that would happen in real life.
You know, but I accepted the fact that of course it's going to be stupid. I just brushed it off as stupid. It's not the worst movie of the year for me because it was just so damn stupid. It's sort of like if you get in the right frame of mind, any movie on that level, stupid. If it tries to redeem itself in some way, I'll accept it. And Eddie Redmayne did it for me because his accent, I mean, he went on to win an Oscar.
Exactly.
Yes.
Be like that.
He went from Stephen Hawking to that thing.
I know, which was kind of amazing. And I'm like, the way he ended it. Plus, you know, Channing Tatum, the fact he took the role. So he was going through like all this press shit and everything like that. Yeah, this is a great role for me. And everything. Yeah, so was Magic Mike, right? Yeah.
Dogs. I love dogs.
Jupiter Ascending, I accept in the so bad it's good category. So I will give it a break. But I'm not going to buy it. I'm not stupid. If it's on cable and I'm drunk, be like, yeah, let's watch this shit fly around through Chicago. Yeah, it never happened, right?
Let me get my two robot pals here. We're going to just rip on the film as we watch it.
Jupiter, yeah, we should do that. We should totally do that. Just do a live.
Yeah. We'll just be like the guy with glasses. We'll just
do it rip track style.
That's yeah.
It. But anyway, those are my best and worst. I mean, the worst movies I named, come on. Let's be honest. I didn't see 50 Shades of Grey, but I heard it was horrible. And Jupiter Ascending, I couldn't put on this list because some of these movies are just really bad. Like I said, there could be arguments with Terminator Genisys, but I think it blew it in a lot of ways. And the audience agreed. This was one of the first Terminator movies to make less at the box office than the other ones. Even Terminator Salvation made more than that. So it's like they put all sequels on hold now. So it's like if this was supposed to be the start of a new trilogy, we're not going to get it.
Nope. Kind of like what happened with the Amazing Spider-Man trilogy that never was.
Oh, God. Just don't even bring up that trend.
Yeah. I will.
Next year's going to be so much better with Civil War.
Yeah. I can't wait for that.
Okay. Well, let's get off the depression.
All right.
Podcast.
Won't we play some Christmas music to make us feel a little bit better before we talk about the first thing on our agenda?
Yes.
Yes. So this week, instead of the usual J-pop Christmas jingles, as we did a couple of those a couple weeks ago with the Wicked Anime Bros, we're going to spin some more alternative holiday spirit songs. To start things off, here are our hometown favorites, the Dropkick Murphys, making merry with a song from their Signed and Sealed in Blood album. This is The Season's Upon Us.
The season's upon us, it's that time of year. Brandy and eggnog, there's plenty of cheer. There's lights on the trees and there's wreaths to be hung. There's mischief and mayhem and songs to be sung. There's bells and there's holly, the kids are gung-ho. True love finds a kiss beneath fresh mistletoe. Some families are messed up while others are fine. If you think yours is crazy, well, you should see mine. Snowballs. I'd like to take them out back and deck more than the halls. With family like this, I would have to confess I'd be better off lonely, distraught, and depressed. The season's upon us, it's that time of year. Brandy and eggnog, there's plenty of cheer. There's lights on the trees and there's wreaths to be hung. There's mischief and old sod, drinks whiskey alone with my miserable dog, who won't run off at cherry, couldn't care less. He defiled my teddy bear and left me the mess. The season's upon us, it's that time of year. Brandy and eggnog, there's plenty of cheer. There's lights on the trees and there's wreaths to be hung. There's mischief and mayhem and songs to be sung.
Darkness, though they have no form. no need for alarm. So burn. So burn. Burn the flame higher and higher. So burn, burn the flame. Never to expire. Here I sit, a skeleton at my organ. The candles in my candelabra burn hellishly, hellish hell. And the laughter unending echoes through the haunted house. A little Christmas spirit, ghostly, haunting, deadly spirit. Every creature is stirring, even the mouse. So burn. So burn, burn the flames higher, 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 and higher. So burn, burn the flame, never. Here I sit, myself, at my instruments. Here they sit, at their instruments. And the music fills and fills, terrifies, horrifies, forever scares. The children of the night, what music we make. So burn. So burn, burn the flame higher and higher. So burn, burn the flame never to expire.
Master of the Brood, Mark Lanegan, with the haunting Christmas melody, Burn the Flames, from his rare Dark Mark Does Christmas EP, which you could only grab on his 2012 Blues Funeral Tour.
Now, why aren't people caroling that, is my question.
Why aren't people caroling that? I don't know why. It's a great song. Burn the Flames. So, this week, or rather last week, Nintendo released a new Wii U exclusive, a new IP from Tomonobu Itagaki, creator of Ninja Gaiden and Dead or Alive, with his new studio, Valhalla Game Studio, and the game is called Devil's Third. It was originally developed for the Xbox 360 and PS3 with THQ, but when THQ went under, the release of the game was then made questionable. But Nintendo came in and told they'd help with development, and Itagaki worked with them to make the game a Wii U exclusive. However, the game has had little promotion here in the States after it wasn't met with much critical acclaim in Europe, despite the fact that the critics and fans in Asia really enjoyed it. It got a limited release here, while it also got a digital one on the eShop, and I don't understand why it got such a limited release. Do you think Nintendo of America was worried that because of the mentality of Europe compared to the mentality of Japan, that we are more like Europe, that they were worried that we were going to crap all over it?
Well, can I just be honest here? When it comes to mature-rated games, Nintendo doesn't always put its best foot forward with marketing, because it's Nintendo. Nintendo likes to lean toward the family-friendly stuff. I mean, you saw when the Wii U originally came out how they catered to that really crappy U-shaped thing with everybody playing Wii Sports or whatever, or just different New Super Mario Brothers U. They wanted to cater to the family audience.
Right.
And let me bring up an example from last year. Bayonetta 2, which I believe was one of last year's best games, if not the best game, because it was amazing. Barely got any promotion in terms of like advertising or anything, because Nintendo didn't know how to advertise a title like that.
Really? I remember seeing a lot of TV commercials for
it. There were TV commercials, but they were built in like a different way than the usual Nintendo ads. I mean, and even with that, they didn't run nearly as much as the ones, say, for Mario Kart 8 or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They didn't have as much distribution. So, I mean, in terms of that, Nintendo sometimes doesn't put their best foot forward when it comes to promoting mature games. Devil's Third was coming out at a time because of their own scheduling. They wanted to push it long enough that you know, it didn't get in the way or didn't release early and end up being as shitty as the European version, because I heard the European version was buggy as hell.
Yeah.
So they delayed it. But the way that they set up the release was for December 11th, 1 week after it released Xenoblade Chronicles X, which it was promoting the hell out of because of all its production value, because of its role-playing elements, because of all that stuff. They wanted to promote that first, you know. But because of its release, I don't think Nintendo had the right opportunity to advertise Devil's Third. It didn't, you know, it said, well, just in time for the holidays, here's the turkey, you know, or something like that. Anything. You know what I mean? They could have just done something like that. But instead, I think it just gave it a cold shoulder entirely. And as a result, you know, it didn't get much of a release in retail. You know, I think GameStop got what? One copy?
No, two copies? I read online. 420 copies GameStop Online got.
Mm-hmm, and that's it. And meanwhile, Nintendo World Store only got like one shipment, and I heard they still haven't restocked. I mean, Nintendo just basically brushed this under the rug because they were fearful about what kind of feedback they would get from the game's mature content compared to what it normally produces. I mean, they didn't even have the game at E3. And it was E3. The E3 is the place to go where you show all your upcoming games and everything like that. But I went to Nintendo's booth and asked, so guys, where's Devil's Third? And they were like, we didn't bring it.
Yeah, but they don't go to E3 anymore, right?
No, Nintendo still goes to E3.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have a press conference at E3 anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They don't have they still have a presentation. They still show off all their games that are upcoming.
Right.
You know, they still have the place on the floor that's still loaded with people and everything. Like Star Fox Zero, you couldn't get in to see Star Fox Zero because the line was so long out the door. That was their big game for E3.
Absolutely.
But no sign of Devil's Third. And I started showing a bit of concern. I'm like, is the game even going to come out anymore? You know, and then they reassured after the game came out in Europe, yes, we're still producing and everything like that. But that's it. Like, they posted like a launch trailer, but only on their eShop and I think their YouTube channel. I think.
And they also did another version of the making of Devil's Third, like the day before the game came out.
Right. I mean, just very little promotion, very little hype. I think the only thing I saw in terms of any hype on Twitter was Nintendo World Store saying, yes, we have copies in stock. And then, of course, a day later, and it's gone. You know, I think Nintendo was just trying to brush it under the rug, but still give it the release just to meet its contractual agreements with Itagaki.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think they just had a lot of doubts about it. And, you know, they saw the European reviews and people trashing it because it was so buggy and everything like that. Like, despite the fact that they delayed the game to allow Valhalla and Itagaki on to really smooth things over, and it's still not entirely smooth. We'll get to that, but
yeah,
I can't help but think they could have advertised this and done a little better with it, because in truth, I played a lot worse action games than this. You know,
well, that's not really saying a lot for the game.
Yeah, but you know, it comes back to that so bad it's good thing.
Yes, absolutely. You know what? I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm having more fun with Devil's Third than I've been having with something like Star Wars Battlefront. I've been having
That's a deep statement right there. But you know, it does have. That's another thing. I mean, Nintendo's trying so hard to push its Nintendo Network as something that gamers have come to appreciate. And here's the title, Devil's Third, that supports like a mature action experience for online players, and yet nothing. You don't even know it's online until you buy the game and be like, oh, there's a multiplayer here. Oh.
And it's actually a pretty good multiplayer.
Mm-hmm, that's what I mean. I mean, actually, Itagaki and his team at Valhalla actually tried to capture some of the elements that were so popular in other multiplayer shooters. And no, it's not perfect, but I think it's pretty feasible, and I think it works pretty well. I mean, you got to be honest. This isn't – you don't buy a game like this for a multiplayer component. You buy something like Battlefront, or you buy something like Call of Duty. You don't,
yeah.
You know, you never really – you know, go out Devil's Third. Oh, I heard this is great multiplayer. I should check it out. You know, it's something you discover.
I gotta ask a question. I have no idea. I don't have a Wii U, and it seems like, and everybody on social media has been talking about it. Sold out. I got it. I had to pre-order it. What is the game all about? Can somebody explain?
Well,
that?
It's funny because when the trailer initially released in 2010. It seemed about to be about two different characters, like this dude with a Gatling gun and this girl with a sword. And I thought, oh, it's going to be multi-character. This is going to be cool. But then somewhere along the way, I think development changed. And now it's focusing on this big tattooed dude named Igor.
Ivan.
Ivan, sorry. Igor. Where the fuck did I too much of that Frankenstein. Ivan. Anyway, so he's basically bailed out of jail to hunt down his former cohorts who set him up and put him in jail to begin with. And almost, you know, pretty much left him. Well, they didn't leave him for dead. He escaped. But still, it's just he basically breaks out and he goes after each of his gang members. But he has like a sympathetic feeling towards one, C4.
Yes.
So, you know, there is actually kind of a story here. And it's cheesy as hell, sure. Yeah. I mean, how do you walk out of a prison killing everybody? That's the worst prison ever.
Yeah, it's very cheesy, but it's enjoyable. It's like in the vein of those 80s action flare.
Exactly. And I was saying, this is like the Van Damme of video games.
No, you know what?
You can't take it seriously, but it's still funny as hell.
Right. It's like Hulk Hogan in Suburban Commando and Rob Van Damme in Wrong Side of Town. It's just so bad, but it's so good. I mean, Ivan is doing all this just so he can own a fucking guitar. What's so special about this guitar that he's gonna go off and kill?
Connections. People have connections to their guitars.
Yeah. Alright. So, you know, playing this game, despite hearing the bad things about the bugs and about the aim and such, I had a very easy time lining up my shots and getting in that nice one bullet kill. I liked how you could change up the controls to suit your comfort. I've been going back and forth between the shooter and default, depending on the situation. And I like the fact that it's so simple to swap between your gun and melee weapons.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the cool things I felt. I mean, I felt a little disjarring at first because you're not used to, like, switching off between the two so damn quickly, you know? But I got used to it eventually. And it's kind of cool how it all comes together. I mean, you can't really, like, you know, combine the two with, like, gung-fu or whatever. But just being able to have, like, first-person shooter elements and, you know, third-person action like that is pretty neat. And hard to pull off. I mean, ask any developer trying to implement two different gameplay styles into one game without them running roughshod into one another. It's not that easy.
And not to mention how hard it was for Valhalla to adapt the Unreal Engine for the Wii U, because the Wii U technically can't run the Unreal.
So you've seen the struggles. I mean, when you go through the game, you do see these hints of slowdown or something breaking up. It's still not quite a perfect game in terms of visuals. There are points in which, you know, when the heavy explosions go off or anything like that.
Yeah.
You can see a bit of the struggle, but you have to understand the Wii U is not an Xbox One. It's not a PlayStation 4. It's a Wii U. You know, I mean, the fact that Platinum Games was able to get a game running so smoothly, but Bayonetta is a completely different beast than Devil's Third.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely, because you know that there was a lot that Nintendo helped out with in regards to Bayonetta 2. I felt like, you know, Devil's Third did get some assistance from Nintendo, but they didn't get as much as what Bayonetta did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Bayonetta accomplished so much. I think, like, Nintendo was like, well, shoot, is this going to be better than Bayonetta? No, it's not. Not even close. So they didn't even give it any marketing.
But, you know, despite all the flaws that Devil's Third has, you know, I'm having a ridiculous amount of fun playing it. Like, there's this one of those rare games where you can, like, totally Leroy Jenkins into a four-way of animes and come out on top with only half your cigarette ruined.
It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, it's just, like, how invincible your guy is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm taking a look here. This game is so on demand because Nintendo didn't give it such a run. I'm looking up eBay auctions, and it's selling well over $100 on eBay, which is ridiculous. I mean, you can buy it digitally for $60 if you have like 15.2 gig free on your hard drive.
Right.
And that's the best way to go because, you know, that way somebody will steal your copy or whatever, and you won't be shit out of luck.
Right. Someone will go into your post office.
That's why I have all my games digitally. It'd be like, you're not borrowing my copy of Devil's Third. F off.
But I like this game, I really do. But my minor gripe with it comes in. I don't know how far you've gone into it, but the boss battles in this game
can be
pretty cheap.
No. Apparently, you don't seem to realize what Itagaki does with his boss battles. This goes back to Ninja Gaiden. When I'm talking the original Ninja Gaiden, when bosses were like fucking ridiculous. ridiculously hard. I mean, I think he wanted to have that. I think he wanted to have that challenge level where the bosses actually put up a fight and you don't mow them down so easily. So I'm willing to accept that because this is Itagaki we're talking about.
Okay. I mean, because I didn't realize that. Because
in that regard, he's not all beach volleyball. Okay, there are some stuff that's in there in regards to how hardcore a game experience must be.
Yeah, and okay, now that I understand that, I can fully understand why the boss battles are like that. But still, it's still really frustrating. It took me 2 hours to finally beat this Jane Doe character. Because these characters have that one shot kill. They have this like one maneuver where if they get you right then and there, you're dead. Even if you're this close to actually killing them, if they get you in that one move, boom, you're dead. Whether it's I forget the first guy, Samu, the one with the red beret.
Yeah,
he has this move where if he grabs you, he stabs you right through in the back and kills you. And with the Jane Doe, she will knock you down with her gun and then blow your face off.
I mean, like I said, Ninja Gaiden level difficulty. I'm fully understanding of that, though. I mean, you just keep coming back and trying to beat their ass.
Yeah, exactly.
I know there are people who give up on it. I know people who play Ninja Gaiden. Well, F this game. It's so goddamn stupid. I can't beat this boss. Something like that.
I mean, but it's not like the situation where we had to deal with in regards to something like Rodea the Sky Soldier, where it was just so awful trying to control that thing that it made it almost impossible to play.
Mm-hmm. So I realize that.
So is this like the Wii U's answer to Dark Souls?
You know what? Considering its availability, considering that the Wii U isn't really made for games like Dark Souls, I'd say so.
You know what this more reminds me of? Have either of you watched the show Ninja Slayer from Animation this year?
I have, and I heard it was good, though.
Well, this... it's one of those... It's from Studio Trigger, the same guys who did Kill la Kill. I know John is not a big fan of Kill la Kill. But with Ninja Slayer, it was just... It was a mixture of, Kill la Kill, but with, some of the Inferno Cop sort of humor and animation style. But it was just so ridiculous... It was just so much fun to watch, even though sometimes the animation was really bad. And that's what Devil's Dirt reminds me of, despite the fact that it's not graphically on par with anything that's even on the Wii U at the moment. Even a launch title on the Wii U, I still am having a lot of fun playing this game.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's sometimes you just have to have fun with something like that. Let me bring up another example. The Earth Defense Force series. Earlier this month, two Earth Defense Force games came out. Earth Defense Force 4.1 came out for PlayStation 4, and Earth Defense Force 2 came out for PlayStation Vita. The games are cheesy as hell. You're basically a one-man army taking on any given form of alien invasion. Giant robots, insects, even ships that are flying above. You have to destroy them all by yourself because your cohorts are fucking useless. So, the cornball level of these games is ridiculous. They're slow down, the production values aren't that great, and for some strange reason you can blow up buildings and not get billed for it, which I think is amazing. I'd be like, screw it, the bugs are going to die and so will this city. But I love those games on a certain level. I know they will never be as high quality as Call of Duty. That's not the point. The point is to present a fun, ridiculous experience that really brings out the best of your gaming skills. Because on harder difficulty, these games are goddamn ridiculous. You know what I mean? Devil's Third kind of follows in the same logic. You got the game's plot point and everything like that, but you can't buy it for a second. But no matter, you're still having fun anyway because ripping up guys is a lot of fun, and the boss battles actually put up the kind of challenge that puts these skills to the test instead of just slapping you down and saying, oh, you'll be through with this in 2 hours.
Exactly. And it brings to mind the quote that the late, great Satoru Iwata would say, video games are meant to be fun. And Devil's Third is fun while playing it.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot of fun. So I definitely got to agree with that. I mean, I wouldn't call it game of the year. Not even
close. No, not a game of the year.
No. I mean, I actually listed this in my best Wii U games 2015 piece on Prima Games. And people were actually questioning, what are you drunk? I'm like, well, yeah. But anyway, in terms of mindless entertainment. That's exactly what I called it, too. I said, look, this is going to be mindless entertainment. That's how you got to accept it.
You know, right now I'm looking at my DVD collection, and a movie just popped up that makes me think a little bit of Devil's Third, starring Clive Owen. It was called Shoot 'Em Up.
Yeah, I mean, that was just mindless fun. I mean, because you couldn't take that seriously for a goddamn second. You can't. Mm. If you do, you're an idiot.
Exactly. And that's the point of Devil's Third. Don't take it seriously. Just have fun with it. It's supposed to be batshit crazy. And it is. Just embrace the craziness.
Not to mention the fact that, you know, Paul Giamatti's having a field day with it. He's not, you know, cringing over the material, wondering if he's going to win an Oscar or some shit like that. He knows it's just over the top and ridiculous. He's having fun with it.
Yes.
And this is a guy who usually takes his acting very seriously, stuff like Cinderella Man or anything like that. Here he's just having a field day. He doesn't give a shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sometimes you just have to do that. Sometimes you know, I can't help but think, like, wonder what would Leo DiCaprio do if he wanted to start a B-movie?
Yeah.
You gotta wonder. You just gotta wonder. I mean, you know, or, you know, I have to admit, the one part I did like about Terminator Genesis was when Arnold was smiling, because that was so anti-Terminator. You're just like, okay, that part was actually kind of funny.
Okay.
John, back me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Sure, I'm totally down, dude. Totally down with that. It's like the best, it's best not game of the year, but it's the best sort of game, and it plays, yeah, Awada. Tons of fun. Wii U all the way.
Okay, I was talking about Terminator, but okay.
Never, oh, yeah, Terminator.
You get my point. Okay, now you get it. I'm just saying, sometimes if you take the cheesy approach to something, it can still work. That's, I mean, going back to Jupiter Ascending, it was so cheesy. It was so goddamn cheesy that, you know, you can't help but watch just to see how cheesy it gets. Whereas Terminator Genesis, they try so hard and they don't try to be cheesy. And I'm like, what is this?
It's like with Fantastic Four. They try to be so serious. It's like, no, be cheesy. Have some sort of personality, please.
Yeah, Crank 2 is better than Crank 1 because they just go off the Richter.
They just don't give a
shit. Yes!
It's so good. It's so good.
They don't give a shit anymore. It'd be like, well, he's going to be electrocuted? Okay, fine. Oh, he's alive. He's on fire.
Monster fight at the end is great.
So. Whereas something like Taken 3, they try so hard to be cheesy, it doesn't even work. No. It'd be like, God! You know, give me more of this cheesy stuff.
No.
And when I say cheesy, I don't mean try to go for the laughs like Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 or you know, try to do something like, oh God, what's a good example of this? Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Yes!
Okay. Dumb as hell, but hilarious, because they don't give a shit. Here's some zombie tits. They don't care. I bought this 1980s movie on Blu-ray called Joysticks. Dumb as hell. Dumb as hell. But, and even Joe Don Baker's wasting it. But it's just so cheesy. It's hilarious.
No,
it's just the way I accept certain things. You know, maybe it is.
That's why I like the collection of Vinegar Syndrome, where they do all when they release all these exploitation films from the 80s and 70s. Just how bad they are, but they're so much fun to watch.
I know, dude. I mean, sometimes you just have to accept cheesiness.
No.
It's just when they try too hard to go. See, you can just tell when a filmmaker tries too hard to make their work seem serious. Or when a developer is like, well, this is going to be game of the year. Ooh, yes. And it's not.
Jolly good.
I'm trying to think of like some really shitty examples of like really bad video games here. You know, something like, here, hang on. Let me just.
Well, I know we talked about Rodan the Sky Soldier. I'm trying
Rodan
to think
Rodan the Sky Soldier, exactly.
Yeah, Rodan.
Well, there was a game on the Wii that would have been perfect. That would have been ideal in terms of, like, you know, the way that the Wii controller is set up and everything like that. It would have been ideal. Then they put it on the Wii U. They take away the Wii controls and they throw in these really awful Wii U controls, and it's just, you know what I mean?
They really fucked it up.
And another title, like Hatred.
Yes.
You know, if they had done like a tongue-in-cheek approach and the comical sort of violence, that would have been great. But they went for the super serious, fuck it, I'm going to be a psychotic approach. And it just throws you off because you actually don't feel any enjoyment out of it. You know, where you can go like over-the-top kills like in Devil's Third, Hatred just gets right to the point, I'm just going to lay waste. and it's nowhere near the same.
No, no, I totally agree with you. But in regards to Devil's Third, the cheesiness, it reminds me of the quote from Chappelle's Show with Arsenio Hall. Damn, this is some good-ass cheese!
Exactly. I mean, like I said, maybe it's just a matter of like some developers just trying to put their best foot forward, but not being too serious about it. I mean, I would be more than happy if developers were less concerned about like the marketing of a game rather than the material that goes into the game itself.
Exactly.
Because you see that. You see so many games that are like over-marketed. It gets to the point that it eclipses the game itself, and you know, like, especially licensed games, you know, it's just it gets kind of ridiculous when it should just be right down to the point. Devil's Third, the way it's marketed and the way it wasn't marketed, rather, and the way it's being sold, it's going to go down as a cult classic.
Yeah,
it is. You say what you want about its production values, say what you want about its story, say what you want about how much it's changed since it was a THQ project, but it is going to be a cult classic. Sometimes a game is so bad that you have to go back to it.
Right. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more with you. I'm having fun with this game. I feel like that we're going to be the ones that convince people to actually go back and play it. And then those people that didn't play the first time around are going to be like, this actually isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
And you know what? I mean, sometimes a cult classic can just come, like, case in point, 50 Cent, Blood on the Sand.
Uh-huh. Okay? Yes.
Let's bring this up real quick. This game, you couldn't take it seriously for a minute because you got a bunch of you got like a rapper armed to the teeth and everything like that, and his entourage, and every 5 seconds, I gotta go get my motherfucking skull. You know, and you'd be like, you can't take it seriously for a minute, but you can play through it with a stupid ass grin on your face. And you're telling me a game doesn't have notoriety in terms of being so bad it's good? Case in point, Shaq Fu comes out in the Sega Genesis, panned all over the place, everything like that. Yeah, what was the big game announcement? Well, one of the big game announcements at the Game Awards this year, Shaq Fu. Yeah. A new Shaq Fu game, and people actually, hey, this actually looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just gotta make room for a cult classic like that. It's just the way it is.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, please, if you own a Wii U and if you have an external hard drive that you have plugged
just
into your
download
Wii U,
it, please.
Please, please go on to Devil's Third. Please download it. It's a fun single player mode and a great multiplayer mode. I know we didn't touch much about the multiplayer.
Yeah,
but let me just say, Gladiator mode, where one weapon in the map, everyone tries to grab for it for the advantage. That is crazy.
Oh yeah. I mean, don't expect Game of the Year. Do not go into this expecting Fallout 4, because fuck you. It's not going to happen. But do expect a good time. I mean, it's like the Defense Force games. Like I said, you accept it with a grain of salt, and you just have a blast.
So, John, do you think we've convinced you to give it a try if you ever bought a Wii U?
He's got to get a Wii U first, and he's got to get Bayonetta 2 first.
Okay, here's the thing. It's not Game of the Year. It's okay. It's a little buggy. The bosses are hard. Yep, you totally sold me on it.
He says that, and he'd be like, nah, I'm not going to get a Wii U. Forget you guys.
I had a Wii U once, like last year, around this time I had a Wii U, and I had Smash Brothers and all that stuff. And then, I don't have a Wii U anymore. So I guess, maybe if I got it, I'd probably give in to the hype. But in my own opinion, it feels like this game is just all hype. And it seems like maybe a glorified, download-only game. For the sheer fact, it's like everybody's talking about it, and from what you're explaining to me, it's okay, it's great. But also, it seems like you're also mentioning THQ, and I'm like, and the fact that also they were gonna release it back in 2010 with two people, but now they're focusing on this guy who's heavily tatted up and everything. And I don't know, maybe if I had a Wii U, maybe I would have tried it, maybe would I go for it. But would I spend what's the cost of this game?
About $60.
Watch it go down in price, though. Watch it go down in price.
Oh yeah, it'll go down.
It's like $30.
Well, it'll go down and then it'll go up on eBay because it'll be less and less available.
Hey, it's the buy and sell, whatever you call it, seller, neater, whatever it is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I guess I tried. I tried out a friend's house. It's almost like a rating in a movie system, like matinee or full price. I'd probably give it a matinee.
Okay, actually, that's a good way to rate it. It's worthy of a pre-noon matinee. Because remember, over here, they have like the before noon, it was like $6 or $7 for a ticket. And that sounds good. I like that mentality you got there, John.
Yeah. I think so. And also,
that's definitely better. That's better than saying fuck no.
Exactly, exactly. And also the fact that I think that the reason why, when you guys are talking about how it's gotten, like, you know, not a lot of press and everything, and how Nintendo focuses on a lot of, like, kid stuff, it makes sense, because the thing is, I don't think they expected Bayonetta to be the hit that it is, because it's very kind of like a little sexualized with the whole Bayonetta costume and everything, and how she's damn near, she's a sexy character. And the fact that having her in a game that's on Nintendo is very different, and a Bayonetta 2, they're like, oh, I'll never, like you said, never get better than the first one. But it's, I, in my opinion, from what I've seen, from what I've played, what little of Bayonetta 2, it's definitely, I think, way better than the first one, just because, I don't know, it's hard to pinpoint exactly where, like, you know, the register is, in my opinion, for 1 and 2. But also coming out with another one, because I've seen, like, I remember I was over your house when the release of Wii U came out, Mr. King Baby Duck.
Yeah.
That we were trying to play. We got into, like, Zombie U.
Mm-hmm.
And Zombie U is a cool game, and I love the way that they developed it. And it was very interesting how a lot of the stuff is played through the joystick and the radar and everything. But it's... didn't do as well because it's not a family friendly game. It's zombies and everything. It probably work out better now because of the whole zombie craze. But back in that time it was released, it was so set apart from all the other Wii U games that it was in its own genre, and people just didn't know, and a lot of parents didn't buy it for their kids because it's like zombies, it's death, it's murder. And yeah, let's just get a Mario Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They tried to release Zombie U for the Xbox One and PlayStation 4, and it was just nowhere near the same.
No, it wasn't.
Because you didn't have that experience. You didn't have, like, the gamepad or whatever. So
right, exactly. The gamepad made it the whole Zombie U experience, having to look back and forth between the two different screens to make sure that you weren't going to be attacked.
Uh-huh.
That's what made it so much, that was what made it feel more real when playing it.
Yeah, it didn't do the same for me as it did on the Wii U. And like I said, you're so rare on seeing mature rated games on the Wii U anymore. Because, you know, like, Activision does new Call of Duty. Obviously, we're not getting any more Mass Effect, you know, stuff like that. So we have to rely on these little oddball titles that just come out of the blue. I mean, we get, like, maybe what? One mature rated game for the Wii U a year, it seems? If that.
No, I think you're right about that. At least one mature game a year.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. Because last year was Bayonetta, this year was Devil's Third. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we got... Well, no, we got... what did we get? Call of Duty Ghosts in 2013.
No, we actually got Fatal Frame.
Oh, that's right. We got Fatal Frame. That's right. That did come out. But, again, digital release didn't get much promotion, did it?
Yeah. And the same with a lot of Nintendo eShop titles.
And that actually
titles.
Wasn't a bad game, either. Fatal Frame was actually really cool with the Wii U gamepad.
I haven't played it yet, but I do really want to play it.
You should. It's really cool.
All right.
Only problem is it's digital only, so you have to, like, buy it or nothing.
You know what? I could probably liken this to, in my opinion, Devil's Third. I'll wait until, like, it's purely seated and a lot of people have made a lot of good, thorough examinations of it. Because it's funny, because thinking about Star Wars and Star Wars Friday, I actually looked up and I saw a video of everybody's reactions to episode 1 when it first came out, like the first week, and what everybody said about that movie. And probably 99% of them were glowing. Awesome, saying it followed canon, it was the best movie ever, we're so happy it came out, and only one person pretty much shit on it. And now it's pretty much... We see episode 1 as probably the worst Star Wars movie, like, ever.
I think
it's just so bad.
Well, what it is, I think the main reason people were so hyped about episode 1 when it first came out is because we were getting a new Star Wars. At the time, it just didn't seem fathomable. Because it's like, you know, it was a great trilogy as it stood. Why do we need to do this again or this again? And then they announced episode 1. Oh, finally, Star Wars will begin justice. We'll see where everything begins. And then you don't seem to realize how serious George Lucas took the prequel trilogy without throwing any sort of Han Solo-based character. And in hindsight, yeah, there was a lot more he could have done with it.
Right.
So I think it's just a matter of hype. I mean, that's the thing. The Force Awakens had unbelievable hype.
Right, you know, which, so well, we will touch on this on our next segment on the show.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. But
that's why I had a segue. It's called a segue.
Yeah, he was trying to be smooth.
Yeah. So we'll segue into Star Wars The Force Awakens in our next segment. But first, let's spin some more holiday classics. Here's a song from this year's awesome holiday special, A Very Murray Christmas, which you should totally watch on Netflix if you haven't yet. Here now are Bill Murray and the George Clooney of movies, George Clooney, with that new Christmas hit, Santa Claus Wants Some Lovin'.
Now mama's in the kitchen cooking, the children all fast asleep. It's time for Santa Claus to make his midnight creep.
Santa Claus wants some loving. Santa Claus wants some loving.
Yeah, I know there's something real pretty underneath the Christmas tree. I ain't hit no lovin' all week. It's beginning to worry me because
Santa Claus wants some lovin'. Santa Claus wants some lovin'.
I've been trying to find this old bicycle. I can't seem to find my pliers. I'm halfway watching mama for that sleepy look in her eyes.
Santa Claus wants some love.
Break it down for me, will you, Paul? Now, holy moly, Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. What size shoe is that anyway? Is that a 7.5-8? Or is that an 8.5-9? Could you? Yeah. Oh, you're awful fine, but I don't think you're mine. You know, there's no place like home for the holidays, and I think I'd like you to take me home, or vice versa. I don't want no turkey. I don't care if I get any cake. I just want you to come back here, mama, before the children wake.
Santa Claus wants some lovin'.
Got me crazy, mama.
Santa Claus wants some lovin'. Yeah.
Now Christmas is for the children, and I want them to be real pleased. Right now, mama, it's Christmas Eve. Come make you happy, happy, pretty, please.
Santa Claus wants some loving. Santa Claus wants some loving.
I am the king of Christmas.
Where are you? Oh, there you are. Well, if you come over here, you'll find a wonderful surprise. You'll have to plug into the central computer to hear what it is. That's right. No, it's not a phase vector. It's your Christmas present.
At the winter star, we know that's where you are. Our chimney's big and round, so you can come right down. And if our wish comes true, we'll spend Christmas Eve with you. Our hearts will sing with glee as we decorate the Christmas tree.
The Quaver Converter isn't complete yet. It isn't finished. Lock in your circuits again quickly.
R2-D2, we wish you a Merry Christmas.
Atu, Merry Christmas.
Recorded before his days as the frontman for one of the biggest bands of all time, that was John Bon Jovi with R2-D2, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, from the long out-of-print record, Christmas in the Stars, Star Wars Christmas Album, which I can't believe
still
actually
better
existed.
Than the holiday special.
Exactly. Which is a perfect segment into... Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, directed by J.J. Abrams.
Yes, quick note here. We are not giving away spoilers on this episode, but Evan, I believe we're doing something special for Christmas Eve.
Yes, we are going to. We'll touch about that at the end of this episode.
Yes, we'll do that, so be good.
Yes, be very, very good.
So, I mean, what I'm trying to figure out here is how we're going to talk about, like, how awesome this film is with actually. Because, you know, we can't... we can talk about the acting. Sure, let's do that.
Acting, the acting, the actors, the special effects.
Yeah.
Living up to the hype. And also the fact that Lawrence Kasdan and J.J. Abrams, as far as being able to put together a story that feels more... attuned and also comfortable, like a shoe or like a suit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just quick note. Sorry to interrupt you. Michael Arndt also took part in the screenplay here. He helped out with Toy Story 3. He wrote Little Miss Sunshine. So he is a great scriptwriter. He took part in it as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Michael Arndt took part in the screenplay along with those two. And he helped touched it up a little bit. So you can just tell where his nuances are, which is really
well,
cool.
He was amazing with Little Miss Sunshine, the character development of that. And you can kind of see that in...
Dude, my mind was blown at what he did with Toy Story 3. Because he took that places, too. Like, the first two Toy Story movies were amazing. It was like, well, we don't really need a third, do we? But after seeing it, it was like, damn, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So
anyway, back to Star Wars. Sorry.
Right. So now J.J. Abrams has gone from doing the Star Trek franchise and gone to doing the Star Wars franchise. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to think that, all right, this is a guy who rescued Star Trek from being a joke. Can he do the same with Star Wars? And honestly, he fucking hit a grand slam out of the ballpark with The Force Awakens. I mean, is it as legendary as the original trilogy? No, but it has that feeling. It has that character development. It has that awe of surprise and wonderment that the original Star Wars trilogy had.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. I don't think he was trying to top what he did with he was just trying to make his version of Star Wars, if you will. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was trying to do the franchise proud while at the same time staying true to the nature of what really got us into Star Wars in the first place. Because I think George Lucas, as much of a genius as he was with the original trilogy, he kind of lost his way with the prequels. He was focused too much on the politics and not really so much as the fun that the people got into.
Right.
The iconic moments that the people got into.
Absolutely.
That's what Abrams was going for.
He wanted to bring back the fun back into Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the characters, because that was another thing that the prequels suffered from. They didn't have any sort of like Han Solo type character to make things really stand out. It was all about the Jedis. It was all about this, about that. And Chewbacca had the cameo at the end of the Revenge of the Sith. Well, the thing in Revenge of the Sith.
Yep.
And who did they team him with? Yoda. Was it the same? No.
No.
You know what I mean?
You know what it was? You know what? The Force Awakens, the original, the newer trilogy from 99 to 2005, they were like trying to House of Cards it.
Yeah, they were trying to like build up a story, but that's the thing. They forgot about the fun. Whereas, you know, like J.J. Abrams had an open play field because Return of the Jedi wrapped up so much that J.J. could just basically build upon a new foundation from there. And while some people think there's not really so much originality from it, a lot of people have accused it of being in the same structure as A New Hope was.
A little bit. I mean, you could see
see comparisons, but...
Yeah, it's somebody... Here's my thought on this without doing any spoilers after watching the movie. There are few... things that resemble the first movie, but better, and it almost feels like J.J. Abrams, like in certain parts of this movie, is just a big like neon sign that says "fuck you, George Lucas." Like I did, like he must have. George Lucas must have pissed off J.J. Abrams so much to the fact that J.J. Abrams did all his research and tried and pretty much broke his back making
literally
this movie. Yeah, no. I heard about that story. He literally just went through above and beyond doing all his research to pretty much flip the bird and say, fuck you, George Lucas, because I'm sorry. There are certain similarities. Like I said, again, I'm repeating myself, but they're better in certain areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, He basically made a new tale that will move the series forward. Because that's the thing. You can always build upon something and take it in a new direction. Like, case in point, you know, the Avengers, when it came out in 2012, was so big. It was so awesome. People were like, well, the Marvel series can't, you know, Marvel can and can't get any better from here. Yet, then again, like, what was it? Like, about 2 years later, we got Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
The same year. There is so much that you can build upon in a franchise. People were so worried about it. Like, wasn't Star Wars, you know, good enough the way it was? Do we really need to build on it? I think the answer is yes. You can tell a lot more stories. Take a look at the novels. Take a look at the comic books.
Look at the video games. Many,
the video games. There is so much you can do in terms of storytelling. You can tell the story of Boba Fett, you know, even if he is digesting in the Sarlacc pit. I don't know what the hell he's doing nowadays. You know, Han Solo. You can tell his young story, even though I have no idea who's going to play him. It's not Ford. It's going to be Chris Pratt. Why not? You know, and then, of course, you got Rogue One, which is coming out next year and is basically going to be a heist film around the Death Star. Now, you tell me that would have even been an inkling of a concept before Episode 7, and somebody would have laughed at you. But now, not only probable, but people actually want it. They want to see how this story is told. They want to see how it all ties together and, you know, give us something to do before Episode 8 comes out in summer 2017. I think the way Disney is playing this out, some people worry about saturation, but I think it's brilliant.
It's perfect.
They did a great job.
And I noted this on Facebook, getting the franchise out of George Lucas's hands. I mean, they didn't steal it. He sold it willingly. He got like 4 point something billion out of it. Yeah. And he gave it all to schools, I think it was.
Yes.
He
gave
$150 million dollars to USC, I believe.
See, it was just seven. It's still ridiculous. And the fact that it's now out of his grasp, I think now it's free to go in so many directions, and we could see these takes. I mean, look who they got lined up. We got Abrams for Episode 7. We got Rian Johnson, who directed Looper, this awesome sci-fi flick.
Looper was a great...
He's doing Episode 8, you know, and Looper, I think...
good.
You know, absolutely. And they're bringing in the guys who did the Lego movie to do the Han Solo movie. And the 21 and 22 Jump Street. Let's not forget those either.
I had no idea about this. Holy shit. That's going to be phenomenal.
Chris Miller and Phil Lord, I think it is.
Chris Miller and Phil Lord.
Yeah, Chris Miller. Yeah, I mean, they did the Lego movie and the 21 and 22 Jump Street. And they're doing the Han Solo movie. And on top of that, I think for Episode 9 or some Star Wars movie, Colin Trevorrow is coming. I mean, they're treating the Star Wars license. They're being careful about it. They kicked Josh Trank out the door the minute they saw what he was doing with Fantastic Four. He was gone. He was supposed to do something. And then he's like, no, you know, he's out.
Fuck your ass.
Just go away. I mean, they're starting to treat it with care and devotion. I mean, I it's almost like what they're doing with the Marvel franchise. Because I think, like, the worst movie in the Marvel franchise was Iron Man 2, and even that was acceptable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So whereas, like, the Star Wars franchise, they're going to have so many different directions, and maybe every movie won't hit it out of the park like Force Awakens did, but it'll still be interesting to see what kind of stories come out of it and how they all tie together over the next few years.
Yep.
Can I point out two different things, the reason why I love this movie, and it's just, this is my...
Yes, and we'll get back to this. Sorry, I didn't mean to wander off. I was just trying to say...
No,
there was
a
reason for this, so...
No, we're all like, excited about this movie and stuff. And here's one thing about me. I love everything. Like, I love material. I love movies and stuff, but I'm very particular. I don't like to go back into the past. I don't like anything back in the past. And there was two things that actually quite ruined. One happened a while ago and one just happened recently. I do not like Land of the Dead because George Romero's coming back. Oh, I love his art style. And he never improved on it. You guys are going to hate me for this, but I seriously hate Ash versus the Evil Dead. Because Sam Raimi is still using the exact same filming style and special effects and everything. It's just, oh, I've seen that before. I want
and
you.
And you know what? I'll tell you what, though. Let me defend against that, okay?
Go
when
ahead.
He went all new style on Spider-Man 3, people shit all over him. When he did Oz the Great and Powerful, nobody even recognized his work. He was trying to cater back to a style that he was comfortable with. I mean, you could even see glimpses of that style in Spider-Man 2 with the multi-cuts and the zoom-ins and everything like that. So he's always had that style. It's just when he's limited by a Hollywood production that won't let him create that inventive style. With Ash vs. Evil Dead, he was able to do that again. And so people say, oh, it's old, oh, it's recycled, but it's fun and it's bloody and it's gory. It's actually one of my favorite shows this year because it caters back to that old style. Sometimes just a callback like that, you know, works like a charm. I mean, let me just bring up another example here. When they announced the all-female Ghostbusters, what the fuck are you doing? You're going to ruin my childhood. You guys are awful. You guys don't care. Then they started showing these promotional shots and everything, and I still don't know about the tone of the movie, but based on the promotional shots, they are staying loyal to the Ghostbusters brand. So yes. I will give the movie a fair chance. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you have to go back. I mean, that's why Abrams is fit with The Force Awakens, catering a bit to A New Hope's layout. I think that's why it's being so accepted, because it's familiar, yet it's new. Sort of like Ash versus Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So in that sense,
exactly.
I mean, it's not everybody's speed. I mean, you love Terminator. I hated Terminator. You hate Evil Dead. I love it. I mean, different strokes of different folks. I don't hate you. I just despise you. That's
Let me clarify what I mean by that. I mean that. Coming from a person in a video editing background, or a person that's trying to learn the visual effects, Ash vs. the Evil Dead, yes, great. It's a funny story. I love Bruce Campbell. I do not like the visual effects they're using in the thing. And I could say, and I was worried about that for the Star Wars new movie. Yeah. But I would have to say, I don't have to censor my. I had the hugest visual effects video editor boner while watching this movie because.
I'll bet you did.
Yes.
Oh, no. Watching Star Wars, yes. Oh my God, because the thing is, they are able to follow. It's almost like Return of the Jedi or just anything after, you know, actually, no, I'll encapsulate Return of the Jedi. It was like they picked up right after 6, but they used the same kind of stuff, but they improved. It was like 2.0 as far as visual effects. Like when you see when you're seeing the light shots, when you're seeing the rifles, when you get it, you're seeing the stormtroopers take hits. It looks better. It looks more believable. You see the force. They added subtle, small things that I'm like, this is so awesome. They made the force actually look like it wasn't somebody going, oh, you got me in the force. I can't move. It was literally, you see the hands vibrating, much like Zoom or Flash was trying to hide his identity, like that really fast friction motion or that vibrating motion. You got to see our hands moving a little bit while people are trying to go, or just everything just looked the same, but only cleaner, almost like HD and 4K.
Let me just bring up another example here, just real quick. Sorry, Evan. I just wanted to bring up this. Let's take a look back at CG characters. Because, I mean, The Force Awakens didn't really have that many to speak of, yet in Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, they're all over the place. The droids, you know, fucking Jar Jar, you know, all that shit. You know, you'd be like, ugh, all that stuff. Whereas The Force Awakens, I didn't really sense too many characters that were built with CG. I mean, there was obviously the one. There was Maz Kanata.
Yes.
No, she was obviously, you know, and Snoke. Snoke, obviously, you know, CG.
I couldn't tell if Snoke was much CG.
You couldn't tell. The way that the quality has picked up, it's no longer comically bad like it was with Jar Jar. You could actually feel these characters have some sort of presence. You know what I mean? That's what I mean. It's sort of like when you had a physical Yoda in the original trilogy compared to a CG Yoda in the later trilogy. You know what I mean?
It was laughable as far as, but of course, you know, that was 99 around that time. Yeah. And now we're 2015. I think that's the reason why I get mad and I stop watching shows is because it's 2015, people. We have 4K. We have all these tools. You can use new stuff and textualize it by still following the exact same realm. Like you have filters that make it look like the old school, but only make it better. And I think that they nailed it with here. And the fact that using more actors, with in a blend, it's almost like I didn't even pick a board. I didn't even care. It didn't come up on my radar. If The Force Awakens was a Netflix series of 12 episodes, I would sit there and watch it. I wanted more. I didn't even care with the time. I lost myself in it. And the fact that I was just amazing. And also the cameos that were in there. If you guys didn't see, there is a cameo of the Raid and the Raid 2's stars.
I know what you're talking about. We'll get in that more into the spoiler section when we talk about cast members. But there are like so many little things that you notice. I mean, I will say this. The thumbs up sequence was, I think, the coolest thing. I won't say who did it. I will save that for spoilers, but you know, just like the little nuances, the thumbs up thing, you know, the return of certain characters and little aspects, you know, and even like some of the more, the larger engaging battles looked like natural back to old school Star Wars style instead of computer. Like the Millennium Falcon flying around everywhere. I was grinning from ear to ear. Empire
Absolutely.
Strikes Back. I was freaking out how good it was.
I couldn't tell you how happy I was to see everything. And I physically, whoever is watching this or watching it, whoever's listening to this and you think we're just talking about hype or whatever, trust me in the fact that I've lived through the horrible, I'm dating myself. I was at the movie theater for Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. I waited in line for episode one and I thought it was awesome, but it felt like a canned laughter, meaning like I should enjoy it and I'm not really sort of should I enjoy this. I literally was happy, excited, freaking out, and I laughed uncontrollably at certain points at this movie. It's a movie that you're going to want to see. More than once. And the fact that like, Kids these days, young kids, people even around 20 years old, all they know is episode 1, 2, and 3 when they were around. And
that's not the way to go.
No, that is not the way to go.
And this brings in a brand new audience, because if you didn't know anything about Star Wars, or you heard about it and you only saw episode 1, 2, and 3, and then you saw this, that's the reason why I think that it's going to destroy everything in its path, because in regards to box office hits and everything, or box office revenue, is because this is going to bring new people into Star Wars that, like me, don't want to see the old ones, because it's like, I love this story, but the special effects and how it's just like, it looks so bad. It looks cheesy, but some people don't like the cheesy.
See, but and on top of that, when you try to improve upon the cheesy, like George Lucas did with his special editions, it throws you off even more.
That's why I'm so happy that I own the original trilogy on DVD unaltered without any of that crap.
I'm not losing it either. And I'm trying to find those despecialized editions, because I heard those were great too.
I had all three of the original 4, 5, and 6 on Laserdisc before they were even touched. They're the 35 millimeter transfer to
that's old school. That's old school. But I mean, going back to the visual effects, I think what JJ was going for, because first of all, he avoided that whole lens flare bullshit, because I think there were only like a couple of small instances, like, you know, when those lasers were going across the sky in the trailer, you know, that's fine. But, you know, like in Star Trek and Into Darkness, he was like notorious for when people even released like parody trailers of what episode 7 would look like with lens flare. And he got rid of that shit, you know, which is great. Number two, I think he just catered back to an old school filming style. I think there were like a couple instances where he did like camera zoom ins and everything like that, or with the aliens on the ship. You know which one I'm talking about. I won't say anything else.
Right. Yeah.
There were instances where you could tell it was pure CG. But other than that, he went for the more practical effects.
And like, which I love. That he wanted to make it feel more authentic.
Agreed.
My bullshit radar never went off while watching this.
No, me neither.
Even with the, like that one sequence where the laser bolt was frozen. But we'll get to that. That was awesome.
Spoilers.
Oh, yes. You'll see it.
All right. So
that's not even a spoiler. I didn't say who fired it or who stopped it, did I?
No, we did not.
Screen, no.
But let me just say this. When it came to The Force Awakens, the only thing I watched were the trailers. And what I loved about the trailers was that it kept everything mysterious. You had no idea what the hell was happening in this film. All you knew was it was going to be Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You didn't know what the story was going to be, what these characters are, where Luke, Leia, and Han were, how they were going to finish the story.
Well, you know where
Han was. Well, you kind of do know. But going into this film, if all you saw was the trailers, you would still be questioning what this movie was about.
I know, and it pulled so many zigs and zags on you, too. Like, who the main focus was supposed to be. Like, and not spoiling, I'm not going to tell you who, but when you go into this movie expecting one person to go one way and another person to go another way, and it throws you off. We'll get to that in the spoiler cast, but I'm just saying it was really cool how they kept spoilers at an absolute minimum. And I also want to give a nod to the people online, the social media, that didn't spoil it. Because they're the winners. Because, you know, they could have gone all over the place and posting spoilers. I think, like, the worst spoilers they posted were the actual spoilers from Cars with the word Star Wars on. I'm guilty of that. I've been posting. I think that's the most I'll post for Star Wars spoilers. I think there was, like, only like a couple. I gotta note this: a couple of instances where guys were real dicks, screaming spoilers coming out of screenings, almost killed. This happened during my screening. One guy was just walking around, and he lets out his spoiler. I'm not gonna ruin it here, but he lets out his spoiler, and three people were like chasing him out of the theater. They were so pissed off.
I showed up early to my movie, and I wore headphones with blaring music, very loud.
Hear anything.
That was smart.
I went to the 11 o'clock in the morning Friday show. There was nobody in the theater when I walked in, and then it got packed up as the end. But I did not take my headphones out until the movie started.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you, John. Good for you.
And I stopped watching the trailers 2 weeks ago, so I did not. And every time it came on, I would change the channel because I was just – and, man, I can't tell you, man. How this, it's so many levels this movie touched me on. It touched me really good, and it bought me dinner first and just everything. And I hope that Star Wars calls me back again.
It will, but it's just going to take 2 years for him to do that. Or rather, no.
A year and then a year and a half.
It's going to fool around with a few other people for a while, and then it's going to come back to you.
All right. I'm just glad he didn't catfish me.
Yeah, no. You know, I'm glad the film actually delivered instead of doing something like, I don't know, turning Arnold into a T-1000. Sorry, spoiler, but Jesus. But no, let's get into the acting. I want to talk about the acting in this movie.
Oh, yes.
Holy shit. I want to – if I had to pick a favorite right now – It's so hard because if I pick a favorite, it'll be kind of like a spoiler. So I'm just going to run down the line and just say what everybody did for
just
me.
Say their character. Yes.
Okay, so John Boyega. Yeah. In case you guys don't know, he started in Attack the Block.
Yes!
One of the better sci-fi movies out there. Go check it out. It's hilarious and fun. He was great as Finn. I had a good time with him. He actually had some good laughs in the movie, some good chemistry with not only BB-8 but also Poe Dameron. I thought he was great in the movie. But Daisy Ridley.
Yes.
She is so good in this movie. She was a lot of fun and another great female to embrace. Because, for the longest time, fans were like, well, there aren't enough female characters in the Star Wars trilogy, blah, blah, blah. She's a good one to embrace.
Yes.
And, she was really cool, too. Oscar Isaac was a lot of fun as Poe Dameron. I only wish he had a little more screen time, but we'll get to that. He was great for what he did. I mean, he had way more screen time than Gwendolyn Christie's Phasma, but again, we'll get to that. But I thought Phasma was a lot of fun. I hope she comes back for more episode 8 semantics like that. I hope she, because she was good too.
Yeah.
Having good, more female presence in the film was a lot of fun, I think. Obviously the classics, Harrison Ford, Han Solo, you can't really deny it. Because I think he was hesitant at first hopping on board the project because I think he was tired of Han Solo, even though his last performance was like 30-something years ago. But he hopped back into the role, and it's almost like he didn't miss a beat.
No, he did not.
He was jumping around. He was making
he
became that. And also,
he looked like he was going to cry in a couple places. I missed this.
Harry Fisher, Lawrence Kasdan, their roles, their acting, their chemistry.
Peter Mayhew, you mean, as Chewbacca? Because Kasdan wasn't in the movie, was he? No, he wrote the movie.
No. That's what I'm saying. As far
Sorry. Yeah.
It's almost like that's the same relationship chemistry they had in Empire Strikes Back, and everything was just so awesome.
Yeah, that's true. And I gotta admit, Peter Mayhew, I don't think he missed a step either. He looked like he was having a lot of fun.
Yep.
Yeah, and then I can't really say much about Carrie Fisher without spoiling. So I'll just say,
let's not say anything about what's waiting. You
know, or Mark Hamill. I'm not going to say anything about his performance. Yep. So we'll get to that in spoiler cast. Yep. But I do want to say Adam Driver.
Yes,
as Kylo Ren. I gotta say, a lot of people doubted him because, you know, like Darth Vader, those are big shoes to fill.
They are.
Those
are,
you know, especially, you know, considering all the shit he went through in the prequels. So, I mean, those are big shoes to fill. But he did fantastic, I think.
I was shocked. I mean, this is the guy.
All the stuff he does in the movie, which I won't spoil, but he just delivers this great malice. Like, he is a true Star Wars villain, you know? And yeah, I thought he was great in this.
Some people would have said, like, I heard a lot of people say that, like, you know, he's a bad guy, or he's just completely messed up, or he plays a poor, like, no, I think that he's next to John Boyega. I would have the John Boyega a second because he was just great, but Adam Driver, he portrayed this character so much that I had so. Because I think I deal with a lot of anger issues and everything, and I just, and seeing that, and I'm like, wow, it's like he just nailed it when it's like. With his, yeah, it was just, I was amazed. I was just like, you've won me, Dark Side. I'm now part of you're now, it was so good to see that. But the chemistry between John Boyega and Daisy Ridley, when it just the back and forth, it's like you could see how that, it was just perfect. It was such a weird kind of like cool thing, but it wasn't. It was like my bullshit meter never went off or like
No, it did not.
With any of these performances. And I'll tell you this, the droids also have played a great part in the film. BB-8
was phenomenal.
Perfect addition. And you can't even tell. This was true. Bill Hader took part in voicing BB-8. You can't tell, can you? It's just so natural. Voice dialect for the robot and everything like that. And, you know, it was cool seeing C-3PO and R2-D2 again, as brief as it was. It was just great to see them back in action, too. You know, all this nostalgia came rushing back. Especially, like, you know, again, I'm trying to avoid spoilers here, but the conversation that happens was pretty cool with the two droids.
Absolutely.
My least favorite? What would be your least favorite actor in this movie?
You know what? I'm pissed off again that Phasma didn't get to do much. But that's all I'll say.
Yeah. I think that our poor man's, the poor man's, what's his name? I'm trying to remember that damn voice actor who's in everything.
Oh, are you talking about the guy who played Snoke?
Yeah, no, listen, we don't have to mention his name, but I know
who you're talking about because I did.
I really do not like seeing him. He just it's so funny that I'm like, I'm saying
you're talking about Andy Serkis.
Yes, well,
see,
the problem is
they didn't establish Snoke enough.
No, and I feel like that they're going to be doing that more in episode 8.
Yeah. He's no
emperor. Oh, spoiler.
Sorry, but he's no emperor, just saying. Andy Serkis, let's be honest, the guy is a damn good performance actor. Take a look at any of the new Planet of the Apes film, you'll see that.
Yes.
Snoke, I don't think he was given enough to do. I'm avoiding spoilers, but they'll establish his character later on. But you can't help but wonder what his deal is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, but that's all I'll say, because we are, you know how damn hard it is to avoid spoilers right now. Sorry.
Yeah, all right. It's
hard.
Okay.
But as far as disappointments, like I said, I think my thing is Phasma. Other than that, I
can't think of anything that I was disappointed with this movie.
How do I call up Carrie Fisher without really picking on her?
She's Carrie Fisher.
She could have. I don't know.
Just say Carrie Fisher was.
She's got a good amount of spirit. It's just something in the performance felt a little off.
Well, it's you know why? It's because all the movies, I guess, after like, you know, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, she was probably high while making those movies.
More than likely. Yeah, it's a whole joke. Karen Allen in the new Indiana Jones movie, she's like drunk trying to get through it. Nah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But you have to admit, at least Carrie Fisher was really cool in terms of the promotion of the movie, like bringing her dog everywhere, and all of a sudden her dog has a Twitter account, whatever. So at least she was spirited about how she did in the movie. I just really wish more was done with what she could have done. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I don't remember.
I'm glad she's back.
Do you know what? Which one I didn't get? Well, I didn't understand why this person was in huge promotion, because I don't even remember seeing this person, was Lupita Nyong'o's character.
Well, she's the computer animated bartender.
Yeah, she's the bartender.
Maz, yeah, she was the one that, trying to avoid spoilers here, but right. She runs basically the modern version of the cantina.
Oh, you know what? Because the thing is, they're all talking about how it's just a, you know, another great African, she's not American, but, you know, another great black actor.
She's American? What are you talking about?
Oh, she is?
Yeah,
well, she doesn't even know. Yeah. Great African-American actress in there. And it's like, really? Where is she? I don't see her. It's like, okay. I just said great voices, great voice actress and stuff, but it was just, that was the only one that threw me for a loop.
You know what? Sometimes it does that. Sometimes you can't tell a certain actor's in it until like years after you see the movie. Like talk about how like Warwick Davis was Widget.
Yeah.
Nobody even knows that. Sees my defense, everything, until they, you know, this was Widget.
Exactly.
So more than likely she's going to be in the same boat, but I mean, I thought she did a good job with her character. I thought she was a lot of fun.
Me too. And you know what? We've been trying to say no spoilers. Spoilers.
We have. This is ridiculous.
Tell you what, folks. Here's what's going to be happening. We're going to be having a spoiler-filled special show. The Star Wars Episode 7 Spoilerific Podcast Christmas Special for Krampus's victims only. We're doing this to punish all the bad boys and girls who haven't gone and seen it yet and have been terrible to their parents, terrible to their lovers. It's going to be a show that where we're going to just lay it all down the line. If you've been good, don't listen to the show.
No. If you've been good, you can listen to the show and see what we think about the spoilers. Let's say that. But if you've been bad, we're just going to play it for you automatically.
Absolutely. That is
We're terrible. It's not going to be a terrible podcast. We're not going to sit there, Darth Vader was Luke's father. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Although, maybe we could do a couple of those.
we'll be like Filthy Frank's followers, who I actually didn't even notice until I was going through all, because everything he posts, people just post just the most disturbing pictures, like a Facebook 4chan. But then I saw a picture, I'm like, wow, so that's what it was. And somebody posted a screen grab of, I don't know how they did it, but they got probably one of the craziest spoilerific portions of this movie, and they had a screenshot and they put it on there like 2 weeks ago, and I had no idea what that was until I actually, like, after I saw the movie, and I'm like, oh wow, this has been on this forum for like weeks, and I'm like, wow, that would have been horrible if somebody knew what that was. So it's just, you know, that's the kind of Krampus thing we're gonna do to you. You're just gonna be scrolling through your Facebook and all of a sudden it just shows Krampus, and he's gonna post that picture and tag you in it.
Yep. Exactly. So why don't we bring this episode of No Borders, No Race to a close. John, DCD, thank you again for being on this week's show. Why don't we do some shameless plugs right now? And John, why don't you go first?
Thanks, dude. RedCloudRiley.com. You can go to my YouTube page where I do daily videos. And I'm currently wrapping up the Into the Badlands recap show called Talking Bad Lands with Phil, with Phil W from Phil's Recap and Review. We put out stuff. I'm going back to Twitch, twitch.tv/the_couchmasters, playing some Naruto and some PC games. And I'm at Rohawk Riley on Twitter. Oh yeah, by the way, YouTube. If I can implore you, anybody who's watching, if you have a YouTube account, and, you know, you want to show some love and give me some Christmas gifts, you can go to my channel, bit.ly/BHRTV, and throw me a subscribe. You know, subscribe to my channel. You don't even have to watch it. I'm just trying to get my 100 so I can get my custom YouTube URL. So that's it.
All right, cool. DCD.
Well, I want to say thanks for having me on the show. Happy holidays to you both, guys.
Thank you.
I got to just say, go see Star Wars. Go see it. IMAX. Go see it on IMAX 3D.
Yes. 3D, definitely.
Just IMAX especially. Like the 70mm holy shit format. Because, I mean, anybody knows 70mm is the best way to see movies. Just ask anybody who's going to see The Hateful Eight this week. I will say, you want to check out my work, I'm over at geekandsundry.com. I also do stuff for primagames.com, gamecrate.com, and it works over at opshead.com, which is the ultimate Call of Duty place for strategy, tips, previews, stuff like that. No, seriously, it's a good site. If you like Call of Duty, bro, go Call of Duty, bro.
Down too, bro.
Yeah, bro.
And, of course, got Retro Issue number 10 coming up pretty soon here. It's going to have my take on Rogue Leader, as well as the new Doom and the classic GoldenEye. Because it's going to be a big first-person shooter slash Star Wars issue. So check that out when it releases, I believe, in January. So, yeah. And once again, happy holidays. Don't drink and drive. If you do drink, do it in your house and make sure it's eggnog. And, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we are going to end this show with a holiday check by Rob Scallion featuring Doug Walker, better known in our circles as the Nostalgia Critic. Here's that Yuletide ditty. I fucking love Christmas. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
Robert. Oh, sorry, this is the DCD.
I am Andy Serkis.
So was you, Snoke.
John Riley.
Reminding you all to have a very happy holidays, motherfuckers. Ho, ho, ho.
Jabba the Hutt laugh.
Misa, ho, 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 Evan, ho, ho, ho.
What do you think of my new curtain?
He's gonna have a good Christmas.
We're never gonna end the show.
No.
No. Goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye. Alright.
I'm full of Christmas semen. I don't know what it is, but it's hot. It's like heaven's orgasm inside an oatmeal cookie shot. And when I put my Santa hat on, it's a needle full of Christmas glee. Coating my house in frilly shit, it Disney trademark intellectual property. Cause it's snowing, I'm out shopping, and I fucking love Christmas. Setting up the lights so my fucking house sings, cause I'm fucking batshit crazy about Christmas. If Christmas was living, I'd fuck it to death, and then consume its body for its Christmas breath. Cause it's growing, I'm not stopping, and I fucking love Christmas.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus Christ on the electric guitar!
I'll buy all things red and green, accumulating thousands in debt. I'll let it ruin my life, making it the best Christmas yet. And I'll play those Christmas carols until my ears will bleed with Christmas cheer. It'll scare the shit out of you, but it's only getting bigger every year. Cause it's snowing, I love shopping, and I fucking love Christmas. I love those devil shit, she'll scare the shit out of me, cause I'm fucking batshit crazy about Christmas. I bathe in hot chocolates and my skin is red, and I quote Christmas story till your soul is dead. Cause I'm soaking in sweet toppings, and I fucking love Christmas. And the deals, and the meals, and the meals, and the steals, and the seals. Keep it longer, make it stronger, nothing strong here, I can stay here all year. Nothing crazy, feeling hazy, something's tasty at the Macy's downtown. Getting high, feeling wired, I'm inspired, I'm on fire right now.
I love the over-marketing for making the blues. By the way, the song's available on iTunes.
I want to smash it open to its different gold and then search its brain for its Christmas gold and then drink its blood. And the Christmas madness will take its toll!
It's snowing, I love shopping, and I fucking love Christmas. Enough to build tranquilizer immunity, I must be fucking batshit crazy about. I'll kill anyone not celebrating with me. Your resistance is feeding my insanity. Cause it's snowing, I love shopping. So put the star atop the tree and buy me a fucking TV. We're going on a shopping spree, my stocking filled with DVDs. My heart is filling up with leaking help. What's coming over me? I fucking love Christmas.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast.
What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.